You don't need prior experience in doing what we do to come into the business, but you also need that kind of customer service ability to go out, don't be shy, talk about yourself, your services, your company, how you can help people. And then from there, we can train you on the actual skills itself.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoy this episode with Jesse Johnstone, president of Fibernew. Today, we're discussing how they became the largest leather, vinyl, and plastic restoration company in the world, how their niche business saves people money and keeps products out of the landfills. We discuss the many revenue opportunities from automotive to aviation and why this is the right brand for someone that enjoys working with their hands. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
We're good. We're looking forward to learning about you and Fibernew. I didn't realize you guys were in Canada. I don't know why I didn't know that. I was listening to you. You have this really cool podcast. I was listening to a few of the episodes last night, just kind of random selection. And there was one where you had four franchisees who were talking about their goals for the following year. And they all sounded kind of weird to me. I'm like, all right, they all sound different than I do, but they all sound similar. The wife is involved. Next year's goal is to add another tech or two, increase my margins. It's like, how cool is that?
They love it.
They love it.
They do.
Like, he started it 6 months ago. Still had the passion, still had the energy. His whole family's involved. He's preparing for his exit strategy. He's going to either sell it to leave a legacy to his kids or sell it to one of his techs.
There's a legacy factor of Fibernew that's really cool. And that's case in point, Justin, is Al, his wife, three kids, all involved. He started out as a technician originally and then ended up buying the territory from his original employer and now still runs it under his own banner.
Tell us about the business model. What do you guys do?
We solve the issue of when you've got your favorite furniture at home and it maybe has some pet damage or some discoloration on it and you don't want to replace it. You don't want the cost and hassle of having to replace it. You don't want it to end up in a landfill prematurely. We come in, we solve that problem. We'll restore it. We'll make it look great again. We'll put it back in commission. We do the same thing in automotives, car seats, dashboards, armrests, all the stuff that gets damaged with just normal wear and tear. We do a lot of work in the automotive space, equal part aviation, marine, medical, restaurants, anything hospitality, education, higher education, anywhere you see leather, plastic, and vinyl, Fibernew goes in, restores that damage or wear and tear and puts the piece back in commission, less cost, less headache, and the environment factor of not putting it in landfills prematurely.
Out of all the brands we've had on this podcast, Cliff, my dad asked me all the time, who'd you have on? A fitness brand, a facials brand? When he hears like this, his ass is going to light up because his recliner, some people wear out their running shoes, right? This man has worn out his recliner. I don't know how you could do wear and tear, like being stagnant, but he figured out a way to do it and he needs this. The pictures, Cliff, if you go on the website.
I agree with you. It looks like it's Instagram. We were with a restoration company and Jesse, people would ask us and say, hey, do you guys mind if I do a ride along? And we would huddle as a team and go, absolutely not. This guy.
How do we prevent these people from actually experiencing the business, right?
Yeah. I mean, you literally could be wading through 3 feet of shit in a basement. No exaggeration. I mean, you could have a septic, right? It was property damage restoration. It was Puriclean, right? Water, fire, mold, and biohazard. Well, Fibernew came out with this video with, what was his name? Bill Bedsole. I watched an entire video from the day this guy started his journey, right? It's a day in a life with Bill Bedsole and his tech. This was the most candid, the most real video I've ever seen in franchising. There was no script. Nothing clearly was staged. I've never seen anything like it.
Everyone does a ride along before they come into the system. Franchisees do their discovery day for them.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the last steps of the whole discovery process is going out and day in the life with a franchisee. So you can see what we do. We encourage everyone to get their hands dirty. We'll even teach them some color matching. We'll teach them some of the repair process because you got to live it to make sure that you're going to love this. So that's the whole point of doing it is no dog and pony show. It's just real life, you know, out in the field.
This guy starts his day at like 9:10, and I think he made like $1,500.
Are you able to talk about margins?
We can a little bit. We don't do financial reporting. We don't poke around in franchisees' financials at all. But I mean, we obviously know the margins involved. They're pretty huge. I mean, if you start looking at let's say restoring a 3-seater couch and a 2-seater couch together kind of thing, we'll typically price that in between probably $1,000 and $1,500. And we're talking about maybe $100 of product cost in the dye and the products. So you can do the math on that. That's fat. That's astronomical. So yeah, when it comes to profitability and doing fiber new work, it's definitely there.
This guy, Bill, got a job with a hospital, and he wasn't going to the hospital. He was going to where the hospital warehouses all their furniture, broken, ripped, whatever. So he shows up to this facility. It's all on camera. It's all just, it's candid, right? And he's giving him estimates on, all right, that exam table, that exam chair. He goes, I live in here. I live in Jobber. This is where I live. He gives the guy an estimate. Then the camera turns to him and he goes, all right, we're done. We've been here for around 40 minutes, $265. And I'm like, the hell? I mean, the guy just airbrushed it. But you know what was really cool? He goes, when you have a client like this hospital and they have this particular, let's call it a shade of vinyl, like this tangent. He goes, once we get the recipe right, I save it so that now when I come back to this hospital and I have that same exact exam table, I know the exact recipe, the exact colors to include in the repair. And he goes, it gets even faster and faster and faster every time I come because I'm not first time here trying to figure out what shade is it. Let's tweak it. Let's add black. It was beautiful. I got to tell you, I'm very impressed with the model. I think this is great.
Walk us through it. Give us like where are you getting the business from? How much of this is B2B? How much is B2C? And where do you see the top revenue streams?
Gotcha. Okay. We have a kind of an internal mantra with franchisees in saying everyone needs your service. They may not just know it quite yet. So that's just another way of saying that there's work everywhere. I mean, whether it's, you know, personal car ownership, the furniture in a business, wherever it happens to be, the need for fiber new is there. One is we do have nationwide partnerships with a lot of furniture retailers, car warranty companies, a lot of moving companies. Actually, we save the day when they damage something and moving it, they need it taken care of. So we can come in and help them with that. Insurance companies we're partnering with across the country as well. The other primary means of getting work on the local level is just going out and franchisees walking into furniture stores themselves and reminding them, hey, I'm here to help you. They'll go to car dealerships, they'll go to medical clinics, hospitals, basically make that personal connection and develop that relationship that's, hey, I'm here to help you. And then we do a lot on the web as well. So web and social, people just searching for repair services, and then just obviously some SEO trickery and wizardry behind the scenes just makes that connection with people who are looking for. So web, personal connections, nationwide partnerships, and the work just kind of comes.
Would you say it's important that a franchisee coming into the system can't just be a tinkerer? They have to be willing to get out in the community and speak B2B to build those relationships?
You're absolutely right. You got to be able to go out and just, it's not even a sales call. It's just like, hi, I'm Justin from FiberNew. I just set up my business here in this area. Here to help you with any of your needs that you may have in your business. Here's how you get a hold of me. Boom, that's an intro call for FiberNew. And then you just repeat that and you basically plant seeds like that. There's no hard selling involved at all. It's really simple. And then also, I mean, your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, once they know that you're in business, they'll start spreading the word for you. So a lot of referral work is it's actually huge for us.
That's great.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
We happen to love, you know, what we'd call hub and spoke models, right? We think this has a lot of spokes on the hub. What we found when we presented is that it's almost like an ADHD where people are like, oh my God, I don't know where to begin. Do I do automotive? Do I do residential? Do I do marine? Do I do aviation? Right? And it's like, stop. Be focused, right? Focus. I don't know if this is still your advice, but this is what I was told. Start with automotive. Go straight to a used car lot. Start making it rain and then crawl, walk, run from there. Is that still the guidance?
That's still what we suggest. And the reason we do that, Cliff, is there's leather, plastic, and vinyl in a lot of vehicles. So you get to hone your skills on all three materials in servicing used car lots. It's a really good training ground. It builds confidence. It actually starts the referral network as well, because from a used car dealership can come relationships with new car dealers into other things bigger and better down the road. So we always suggest, if you want to start anywhere, look at used car dealers. Sometimes the market determines it for you. Meaning, I was talking to a newer franchisee in Iowa City yesterday, and he went home after training with full intention to go after car lots. He went home and all of a sudden all the furniture stores were calling him like crazy. So he ended up just doing, you know, kind of warranty work and furniture work primarily off the hop. Sometimes the market will actually predict, hey, this is where we actually need you, and franchisees get started out that way. But yeah, used car lots, that's actually where we started way back in the day, is, you know, kind of developing products and techniques was in used cars, and then it just grew from there. We still stick to that as a kind of a baseline model.
Do you do headliners?
Yeah, we can. If it's small, we'll do it. If it's a large rip, it's just better to replace it. We can do a touch up only, but headliners are pretty tricky.
What about the headlamps? All these older cars, do you do those?
Some franchisees will do that, actually, as a bit of a kind of an add-on service. Yeah, some do, some don't. And that's kind of baked into our model too, that there is some flexibility on the services that franchisees can offer. Franchisees have the leeway to add on services, like you just mentioned, headlight cleaning and polishing.
Justin, just for the audience, I just want them to understand like how big this could be, right? So you start out with the automotive industry, then you end up on a used car lot, you end up doing some cigarette burns, you end up doing some ripped leather, ripped vinyl, or plastic repair, then you end up in the RV interior business, then you end up repairing someone's vinyl siding, vinyl window. Then they're like, hey, can you do my leather couch? Can you tighten it up? Then they have a vinyl floor. Then you end up, hey, we own a boat. Do you do that? Then they happen to own a little airplane. Maybe it's a Cessna. You end up at the airport in the aviation business. Then they're like, hey, we own a diner. We own a restaurant. You end up in a commercial or the government or the B2B space. Then their neighbor's a doctor and you end up doing exam tables. You end up doing dental chairs. I'm like, holy crap.
Medical, gym equipment. People wipe the seats with the alcohol wipes. They dry out and they crack all the time.
This is unreal. It's unbelievable. And again, we love that. I just want the listener to understand, this is not, oh, you repair leather. You got to think bigger. There's a lot of spokes on the hub with this business model. Tell us about national accounts, Jesse. When we were watching the video, the gentleman mentioned something about Dave & Buster's and that you might have some national account programs. Well, how broad is that program?
We do. So we do partnerships with a lot of different companies. We, in full disclosure, don't sign contracts with anybody. The reason we don't do that is we want our franchisees to be able to dictate their own schedule. There are regional price differences that happen from West Coast to Midwest to East Coast. Economies of scale in different pockets of the country. Scheduling has to be flexible. So a lot of national accounts will say, we want to pay this exact price and we want this exact turnaround and all these parameters. So we have to position it more as, hey, we're going to look after you. We'll help you with communication. We'll help you with coordination. Here's how you get a hold of our franchisees. You're going to bill them directly. You're going to work with them directly. We're not going to dictate anything from head office. So we're kind of the facilitator more than anything with national brands, and just say, hey, let's make the connection. And then you run with it directly with our franchisees. Furniture stores, car warranty companies, moving companies. We're getting more and more into larger medical companies as well. So hospital systems and clinic systems. Anywhere we can offer services on a regional or national basis, we're trying to make those connections as best we can.
I actually like that though, being like more of an approved vendor as opposed to having a contract that dictates when I show up, what my pricing is going to be. You hear this all, like everyone in franchising is so obsessed with national accounts. But, and then you talk to the franchisees and none of them are happy with the program because their margins suck. And right. And they don't control the account. And it's like, you know what? Just be an approved vendor. I think that's kind of neat. I think one of the cool things about this business is that the franchisee is actually learning a skill. And this is a skill that most likely will not be replaced by tech. Who knows where we end up. But for someone who's not handy, how hard is this skill to learn how to do? I know one of the requirements is, first of all, you can't be colorblind. You have to be able to match color. Can anyone do this?
We say yes, for the most part. There's one exception I'll talk about in a minute, but you nailed it with, you have to be able to distinguish color first and foremost. So we actually get that out of the way fairly early in the process when you start looking at us. Let's see how well you can distinguish color. We have a simple online test. And if you get 80% or higher, we're good to go. The second attribute is being a problem solver mindset type of person. If you're not afraid to patch drywall that has a crack in it or a hole in it, you're not afraid to maybe rip the cover off the toaster and fix it if need be. You've got that kind of muscle that says, hey, I'm going to figure this out. I know I can solve this. I know I can do it myself. That's a really good attribute to have. You don't need prior experience in doing what we do to come into the business, but you also need that kind of customer service ability to go out. Don't be shy. Talk about yourself, your services, your company, how you can help people. And then from there, we can train you on the actual skills itself. So to answer your question, Justin, we've trained people who come from a teaching background, who have no experience in doing necessarily what we do. We've got people coming from manufacturing. We have tow truck drivers. We've got salespeople. I mean, you name it. A lot of corporate refugees as well. So even C-suite managers, people who are in management positions, want to get out of the office and do something different. We can train you on the skill. Distinguish color, have the hustle, have the ability to go and talk to people, and then we can train you on the rest. And the one exception I will mention is we've trained well over 300 people in doing this business. And there's only one person we had to send home halfway through training and saying, you know what? I don't think this is working out. So that's a pretty good percentage.
Well, I'm looking at Cliff's face as you're saying this, and I know you're thinking that I'm disqualified.
He's already disqualified. You're the second guy they sent home. I love that you're doing the online colorblind test. We used to own a residential cleaning company in Palm Beach County, Florida, and customers would call up and say, you need to send the maid back. There's a pile of dirt in the corner. So Justin or I would go back and we would see this pile. So we decided to go get eye exams. Now, we had this one maid, and it looked like her one eye had full-blown glaucoma. So we give her an eye exam, and Justin's next to me, and she's doing the whole E, you know, F. And Justin goes, wait a minute. You're telling me that your bad eye is better than your good eye? It's like, how could the glaucoma eye be better than your other eye? I mean, you can't make this stuff up. We were doing eye exams with these people. And you know what? They're not making a lot of money and they do have vision issues. And that had a lot to do with why they didn't have that attention to detail. No different from you saying you think gray is blue. That's a problem for FiberNew. Gray can't be blue. I'm sorry. Like, you have to know the spectrum.
Was this a lack of professionalism, or could they literally, like, they just couldn't figure this thing out?
It was like a dexterity thing. It was just like, they just couldn't quite get the airbrush feel. They couldn't quite do the palette knife. You know what I mean? And we really tried and they really wanted it, but it just came to a point where we had to get real and say, look, you know, we want what's best for you. And this is just not a good match, but very low percentage rate, obviously, with one person out of 300 plus.
Well, we love these businesses because I know the whole optimist thing. I get it, but I do believe this is relatively future-proof. And I'll define future as like a 20-year runway is future to me, right? 20 years, I think, is future. I think that a FiberNew is future-proof for at least the next two decades.
I would have to think that the cost to repair or restore is a fraction, a third of the cost to replace.
Pretty much nailed it. Yeah, it's a third max kind of thing, right? So, I mean, if you go out and you look at the price of furniture these days versus what we can restore it for, there's a pretty big spread there.
Those exam tables are thousands of dollars. Those exam tables, thousands of dollars for these things.
And it's also the time factor too, guys. I mean, especially in a medical facility, they can't have a table or a bed that's down out of commission. So we can go in and do a repair and it's back in use within a couple of hours, as opposed to it having to be hauled out to an upholsterer, get reupholstered back. I mean, we're talking days. We can do it in a matter of minutes and it's back in commission. And that's really the same for maintenance companies. Airplane maintenance companies love us because downed airplanes is not good. We can go in and obviously do what we need to do and get them back up in the air in no time.
It's a gig economy. All those jets are leased. They have to generate revenue.
That's right. They can't sit on the ground. Same with trade-ins in car lots, dealerships, all these things. I mean, time is money, right? So we're able to cater to that.
Jesse, when I think about this business, so again, a few things that I like: fast open, low overhead, high demand, high margin. I would think fast cash flow. I was told at one point that there are people who are leaving training with jobs already booked, and you don't need many to start cash flowing. So you're talking cash flow in the first few months. Again, no guarantees, but I think that's pretty common with the brand.
You really can, Justin. Yeah, we love it when on the second Friday of training, so it's a 2-week training course. And usually by that second Friday, their website's turned on, customers are starting to find them online, and they'll go home Monday morning with jobs lined up already. We love that. I mean, talk about a kickstart. And then from there, it's really how aggressive they want to get with the business, how focused they are in the ramp up. They can be cash flowing positively in very short order. We also give them a 6-month ramp up period with no royalty fees. For the first 6 months, there's no royalty back to us. That gives you your time to get your feet wet, get established. And then in the 7th month is when the royalty kicks in.
So everyone starts out doing the work themselves. They're kind of solopreneurs. It's a self-employment model. How many people just stay there? I don't want employees. I enjoy just kind of doing the work and tinkering and fixing things, and I find it rewarding, and I don't want to have to manage people. And how many people actually scale, like this gentleman that I heard on the podcast who has techs and kids and everyone's involved and he's adding more and more people? How many actually scale this into like leveraging other people?
There are 3 buckets of franchise owners in FiberNew. One is the empire builder. So the one that you just mentioned, the person who grows a team, adds multiple technicians, typically would even have a shop, some sort of storefront, multiple vans on the road, the whole thing. We're talking like enterprise level operation here. The second bucket is the owner who wants to make money, is driven, but also wants to keep it fairly simple. Usually they'll hire 1, maybe 2 employees to grow their business and scale it, but don't get, you know, too big kind of thing. Still keep it simple. And then the third bucket is the person who wants ultimate simplicity. They just want to maybe escape from a scenario where they've managed multiple people before. They don't maybe want employees. They want total freedom in their schedule. Maybe they have a family, whatever it is. And so they want to keep things very, very skinny, simple, low overhead, you know, fast operation kind of thing. We still have most franchisees starting out in the owner-operator model and sticking to that and really enjoying it, having a really good lifestyle, making money, building something of value. And then come down the road, I'm going to start to add my first employee, my second employee. And then further down the road is that empire builder category. And that's the other thing with us is we don't dictate anything. You don't have to hire employees. You don't have to scale. You can keep it as simple as you want. You can grow it to the biggest heights that you want. It's completely up to you as an independent business owner.
And you don't mind as the president, brand president, because you're getting a flat rate per territory. It's not correlated to top line growth. So what is the size of a territory? How do you define a territory?
At minimum, we want 300,000 people and in between 6,000 and 8,000 businesses. So we know that that's more than viable to go out. I mean, in between 6,000 and 8,000 businesses, there's no way you would ever reach every single business in the lifespan of your franchise contract. And then same with 300,000 people. There's no way you could touch all of them. So we know that that's more than enough to build a viable business. You can scale it within those bounds. We have a small percentage of franchisees who do add multiple territories or maybe annexes to their existing territories. For the vast majority of them, that home turf of 300,000, 6,000 to 8,000 businesses is more than enough.
That's a big territory. And it's theirs. You can't, it's not an open territory where I could go into someone else's. I need to stay in my territory.
That's right. Yeah. Assigned zip codes. Those are yours, exclusive to you. And only you can service them.
I love this quote. They talk about business people. A lot of the people that you have, and we've met them, obviously, being in this business, and they're displaced managers. Wexler, Justin, posted this on LinkedIn today. He said, a millionaire once said to me, people don't have the patience to dedicate 3 years to building their own business, but they have the patience to work for others for 40 years. I thought that was great. It's like, why don't you go out on your own, man? Oh, no, I don't want to do that. It's like 3 years of grinding it out. It's a lot of work. It's like, yeah, people don't have the patience to dedicate 3 years to building their business, but they'll work for patiently for someone for 40 years. Crazy. Love that. That's a FiberNew person, right? It's like, look, I've been there. I've done the rat race, corporate America. I want to go out on my own. I want to build something for myself and make great money.
Absolutely.
We know they're doing well. I'm not saying this really to you. I'm saying this to the audience. A lot of clients get upset when there's no earnings claim. It's like, yeah, I don't know if we're going to look at it. Obviously, they're not proud of their numbers if they're not going to post it. Just pause for a minute. If you're looking at a brand that doesn't have an earnings claim, that's where validation comes in. Start reaching out to existing franchisees and get the information from them. They'll tell you, and they have no financial gain. You financially benefit from a deal. Justin and I financially benefit if we bring the deal to the table. Bob Johnson and the team, right? Fran Dev benefits financially from the deal. But those franchisees scattered around America and Canada, they don't benefit at all. They're there to just candidly answer your questions. Would you do it again? Is Jesse a good leader? Or do you feel job ready day one? How is the support post-training? Are they there for you? Are you making money? Would you do it again? All this stuff. Yes, yes, yes. And yes, it's like, okay, you don't need a written earnings claim in item 19 to close the loop on due diligence and figure out if this is a good investment or not. So a lot of people, you know, they just, it's like, nope, no item 19, I'm out. Something's not right. What is the flat rate royalty, by the way?
Starts at $795 a month. And so that's access to our complete support team, our support system, all the software that you use to run your business in the background, access to our products. Your website is set up and maintained for you. Social marketing, Google Ads is set up. There's a tremendous amount of value in $795 a month.
It is literally flat rate forever.
At the beginning of year two, Justin, there's a 5% increase for that year. Year three, another 5%. And it does cap out typically at year, I think it's 12 or 13 or so. So it doesn't grow incrementally. There actually is a cap. But I mean, we've got some franchisees doing, I mean, seven figures plus, and some franchisees doing six figures, and they all pay the same rate. And that just goes to show that, again, it's what you make of it. And then back on the no financial reporting cliff, it's funny because it's something that a lot of franchisees appreciate when looking at us. But usually when they discover that, hey, there's good reason why I should be excited about this, because that means the franchisor is not going to be looking at my financials or asking for reports. So once you understand that and get your head wrapped around that, it's actually a good thing for you as an independent business owner. And then, like you said, ask our franchisees anything in validation. We have a very open culture here. It's very glass door. You can ask everything from profitability to when were you profitable, anything you want financial related. Our franchisees will by and large answer that for you. So that's how you get around it.
Jesse, if you, knowing what you know today, over 300 locations, have you modeled what if we charged a 6, 7% royalty? You could even do probably 8 to 10 in a business like this.
You could do 10%, totally.
Do you feel like you're leaving a ton of money on the table as a franchisor?
We've briefly looked at that and built some rough models. And you know what's funny is our revenue model at the franchisor level about equaled what a percentage base would be anyway. There's some parallel lines there. So that was enough to say, no, we wouldn't even consider it at this stage of the game.
You modeled it. All right.
The other thing I think it's important for everyone to understand is that this is the kind of business where not everyone gets into this business to build an empire. Like Jesse said, you make what you want, right? Build it to whatever you want it to be in whatever period of time. Some people get into this business, say, listen, I don't want employees. It's a huge margin business. I'm semi-retired, whatever. I could do a job or two a day and make some extra cash, and it's all good. Some people just didn't get into this business to build this massive company.
If you want to scale it, by all means, we'll support you and love to see that. If you want to keep it more lifestyle driven and have a good life while doing it, absolutely. Either model's fine by us. We'll encourage and support no matter what.
Awesome.
I watched on the video doing estimates. Do you have any data on closing ratios, any KPIs where you could say, listen, when we do an estimate, we close, you know, X percent. What do you know? What can you share on KPIs?
I can tell you it's about 2/3, so about 66%, yes. So plus or minus, there's a pretty high success rate with quoting jobs and getting approval on them.
And who's doing that quote, Jesse? Is that like a national call center, or is that the franchisee actually handling a call?
The franchisee, Justin. So we are partners with Jobber. I know you wanted to talk about Jobber, Cliff, so maybe we can dive into this. But the way we partner with Jobber is every single franchise has their own account with Jobber. So it's a standalone instance that all of their inquiries get fed into. The quote form on the franchise websites feed directly into Jobber. So when a customer finds you online, they fill out the request a quote form. that goes directly into Jobber. From there, you can create the estimates, you can schedule the job, the invoice, collect payment, everything's buttoned down. Anything that comes from existing clients, so maybe it's an RV dealer, a car dealer, furniture store, whatever it is, Jobber has a client hub that the customer can actually request a scheduled visit through. So that goes directly into your calendar in Jobber. Then you just basically fulfill it, create the invoice, everything you need to do after the job's complete. If a text message comes in or a Facebook message comes in, most of our franchisees will end up feeding that into Jobber so that it's in one area. We want to not have to go to our inbox, to our cell phone to check text messages, to go to Messenger to check messages there. Try to get into the habit of just feeding everything into Jobber, and it just becomes a lot easier to manage it. Since we've put Jobber in place, we've had a lot of franchisees saying, I can do at least one, if not two extra jobs per day because of how much more organized I am. It's been huge for us. Franchisees love it. It's created tremendous value for everyone across the board. We couldn't be happier with it.
What were you using prior? Something proprietary?
We tried the in-house experiment first. So I come from a technology background, so I can't help but say, hey, if there's a problem that needs to be solved, let's try to build something ourselves. So we tried the first iteration of it just with very simple, let's handle inquiries, let's handle the creation of quotes and some invoices, and then we'll sync that into QuickBooks and everything will take care of itself. It worked quite well for a couple of years. But then franchisees wanted more and more and more. We got to a point where we just said, hey, we're not software developers, but we've proven the point that franchisees want something like this. So that's where Jobber came in and basically kind of took that portion of the business over. Prior to that, it was really inbox driven and then using QuickBooks to create invoices. Jobber really solved that problem and just bringing organization and optimization to the business.
Where does the color matching engine reside? Is it within Jobber or that's a separate?
That's separate. So that's something we built in-house and it bolts onto our dye system. So we create our own products, meaning we create our own dyes. Then you have to mix dyes, match them together to create those recipes to get the perfect color match. And so we built in-house a color database. And then we use some technology and a hardware reader or a color scanner that will scan the piece that you're working on. It beams back to the app that we built, which digs into the color database and then says, hey, you need these four colors to achieve this color match. And then that data is saved for future reference. And it really, I mean, it's great in the field, but it also has that ramp up time shortened dramatically. We used to spend almost a week teaching color. Now we do it in one day. So the learning curve to color matching has been greatly reduced by this technology. It's been a game changer.
They're proprietary.
Yeah, we make all of our own products.
And then distribute it throughout the US and or six countries now.
Globally, that's right. Yeah, so they're not off-the-shelf products by any means. They're available only to our franchisees. We make them ourselves. We design them ourselves. We listen to feedback from franchisees. If they need a new product to respond to a market need or a customer need, we're always listening for that feedback. We have a gifted and brilliant in-house chemist who we can throw problems at and say, hey, we call him the wizard. Hey, wizard, can you make a product that does this? And 6 or 8 months later, he'll come out from his lab and he'll say, here you go, try this.
Anything patented?
So it is so proprietary and kind of like the secret Coca-Cola recipe that we're confident in not having to go through the patent process. We keep it very internal, very in-house. It's so specific and so proprietary that we feel that we're kind of safeguarded just by nature of what it is.
Do you think your competitors just have their own proprietary formulas or are some of them using some off the shelf stuff?
Most competitors, to our knowledge, Justin, are using off the shelf products.
Interesting. I did not know this.
Yeah, you see, now you're inconsistent on the color match. See, they have consistency in manufacturing, right? Like ISO 9000, that type of, it's consistently made the same way. The dye lots are like within reason. So all of your colors are this, but if you're buying off the shelf, there could be so many variations of color formulas. Interesting.
So it's really, it's under constant innovation as well. How do we make existing products better? How do we design new products? It's completely flexible to market demands, essentially.
Anything big you're working on?
Product-wise, our latest innovation that we released earlier this year is new products to respond to some of the new synthetic materials that are coming out. There's new material out there that mimics the look and feel of leather, but it's actually not leather. So we're not talking about bonded and bicast and some of the other machine manufactured materials that are out there. These are new materials just in the last couple of years that are coming out. We're seeing them mostly in automotive. any new car that you see typically past about 2020, 2021, the seats are made from material that is actually brand new. It's a type of leather upholstery. It's vinyl based. It either has a silicone or a Teflon coating on it. That makes it very durable. That also means that traditional repair products don't stick to it, right? Because Teflon's meant to repel everything. So we had to develop products that actually respond to this that will allow us to do work on automotive going into the future. We're also seeing it in medical. We're seeing it on commercial furniture as well. And this is one area we know pretty high degree of certainty that our competition doesn't have any comparable products. So we're able to eclipse the competition on these new materials that are coming out. That's been the biggest advancement for us product-wise. Technology-wise, like most companies these days, a bunch of AI stuff is happening in the background. Some of our internal systems are being driven more and more by AI companion type technology. All of our websites are now AI driven for customer interactions and getting quotes, having conversations with customers on the web and through social. So always lots going on technology-wise, always lots going on product-wise. We just keep pushing forward and driving and innovating, trying to be the best all the time.
What's the investment, total investment, single territory?
Single territory is $79,000. So that gets you the territory that we talked about with 300,000 people at minimum, 6,000 to 8,000 businesses, all the products, tools, training that you need to get started. You have about a year's worth of product until you have to start reordering. So for $79,000, that gets you everything you need. You do need a vehicle on top of that. We want you to have at least 15 to 20,000 working capital on hand. So we're all in at about the 120 mark, guys, with vehicle, working capital, and the actual franchise itself.
Love it. It's asymmetrical, right up a rally, low investment, super short ramp to break. Don't need a lot of employees. I could start out doing it myself and then just scale it.
You got it.
Good margin. Checks every box for us. Why do we not do more in this, Justin? How come we don't do more deals with this brand?
Well, the brand's starting to sell out in most major markets. Territory's getting tight.
We still have at least 250 territories across the country, believe it or not. So a lot of secondary markets, the Wichitas and the Little Rocks and a lot of the Springfields out there. It's more those centers that is really the next phase for us.
We just said something the other day, a ticket to Spring. Hey, guy runs in a train station, give me a ticket to Springfield. Which one? The Springfields. That's great.
Exactly. And they actually make great territories because logistically, they're easier to navigate, easier to get around. This is a mobile business. You can't be fighting traffic, you know? So sometimes smaller cities make really, really successful vibrant territories.
I mean, the amount of times we've heard on this podcast that our top franchisee is in one of the smallest markets, it's incredible.
We just interviewed a guy. What was he doing? 12, 14 million in the middle of nowhere?
South Dakota. Last question for you. So I'm on X the other day and there's someone in franchising makes a comment about how people discount the importance of the network of franchisees in franchising. Like everyone talks about support from the franchisor, but there's so much value in having these other franchisees that are on your team and sharing best practices and experiences and what's working and what's not. And someone who's not in franchising retweets and says, yeah, not that important because there's all these masterminds and forums that you could join if you're in business on your own. And someone else in franchising steps in and he's like, it's different. Can you talk about, I know Fibernew is big on people and culture. Can you talk about not just the corporate culture, but how the franchisees work together? Because I kind of got a sense that that is important from some of these podcasts that I listen to.
When you are looking at opening a franchise, you're looking at getting into a pretty significant relationship. Not unsimilar to when you're going to marry somebody. Do they respond to what I need? Are they the right fit for what I'm looking for? Can I give them what they need? All these things have to be checked off. And it's very similar in franchising in that culture is huge. You got to know that you're aligned ethically on a moral level. Is that sense of camaraderie there? I think that's really huge as well. And we actually hear it a lot, even with us, in that this can be a little bit of a solitude type business in that if you're a sole owner operator, you're on your own for the most part. Right. In your van, going from job to job, you're interacting with customers, but you don't have that person next to you in your cubicle or the office down the hall. You don't have that kind of sense of the buddy system necessarily. So that's where having someone that you can pick up the phone, maybe it's your neighboring franchisee, maybe it's the classmate you did training with. It could be our support team. Obviously, there's lots of people that you can call, but the baked in value of having that sense of community and camaraderie with fellow franchisees is absolutely huge. And it's actually really, really big and important at FiberNew as well. For instance, the storms that just happened on St. Pete in particular, when Helene blew through, we had one franchisee who lost everything. They were right in St. Pete, house flooded, garage flooded, everything's gone. The franchisee from Port Richey, the franchisee from Tampa, a franchisee from Lakeland County, what did they do the next day? They drove to St. Pete and helped clean out the house that was gone of their fellow franchisee. That's the type of thing that happens in FiberNew all the time, you know? And we have next week, we have one of our regional seminars in Kansas City. And the amount of excitement of people wanting to see and looking forward to seeing their fiber buds is what we call them. I can't wait to see my fiber buds that, you know, getting together, sharing moments together. There's a huge sense of kind of commonality with our franchisees. We have a very low asshole factor, if I can speak frankly. I mean, everyone is a great person. It's incredible. I don't know how we do it.
It's because you're all from Canada.
I don't know how it works, but we just bring in really great people and everyone's on the same page. They're here to support each other. And it's huge.
This is not just the franchisees calling each other. The franchisor is doing things to facilitate this, like regional meetings and events.
Absolutely. Yeah. We bring people together, whether face-to-face, we bring people together online through Hive, which is our support app. So people are on there all the time talking with each other, sharing ideas, asking questions. So they're basically connected all the time through some of our support tools. We have a lot of franchisees who just once a month get together for breakfast if they're in the same area. You know, let's just have some bacon and eggs together and talk shop kind of thing. So we love that too.
Good for you. You're building a nice culture. Like it. That's what franchising is all about. Leveraging intelligence, right? Building relationships, getting the answers to the test. Is it helpful? Yes. Is it going to replace being part of a network of franchisees, 300 strong? Absolutely not. Yeah. Absolutely not.
Now, the collective brain power and sense of common, you know, where are we going? Are we in this together sort of thing is huge.
Same logo, same industry. We're all, I mean, come on. A guy running a pharma brand is just not going to be able to, can he add value? Yeah, but he's not going to add the kind of value that a neighboring franchisee of the same brand can add. So people like to shrink the success of franchising. They want to push against it and defy it. Franchising is the fastest path to wealth. It's a risk mitigation strategy. You're leveraging, again, not only your intelligence, you've been there over a decade. Guys like Bob, you got a 30-year veteran Justin just mentioned in the system. Why would you not call that guy? Hey, I'm in St. Pete. Can I take you to lunch? Can I pick your brain? Can you help me? And people overwhelmingly will say yes. We do all want to help each other. Very rare people don't want to help another person.
Who's the guy, Cliff? And they gave him a Star Wars nickname.
Yoda. His name was Tom.
They called him Yoda. I mean, the guy just like the knowledge, the experience, and he was just willing to share with everyone. They like worshiped him.
Tom Light. He was from Maine. And he was from Maine. You know, not like a major market. He's from Maine. He was the smartest guy in the room.
Unreal.
Yeah. He's close to 40 years in this business. So he was one of the very first franchisees. He's the guy who sold his territory to Al, actually. So Al used to work for Paul. After 29 years, Paul sold it to Al, and now he works for us at head office in a support role. The Yoda.
Everyone needs a Yoda. Every brand, you do. Everyone needs that person, right? That just that mind trust. They just know all the answers. It's crazy. And they love talking about it. It's like, you're like, hey, I don't want to bother you. No, bother me. You couldn't spend enough time with these folks. They just love it. We're all in. We are approaching the hour. I thought this was a fantastic episode. I love the brand. I think you're running an amazing company. Congratulations to you. You've been there over a decade. Great job. I wish you a long runway. And I think Justin and I need to send more clients this way. It's a good brand.
We need people in Springfield.
We'll fill up your secondary markets.
The Springfields.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks a lot, guys. Had a blast.
We enjoyed our time with you as well. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. You have a great weekend.